This is Twit.
Hello and welcome to another Ask Me Anything, also known as an AMA for short. It just makes it easier to say quicker that way, I guess. It's internet speak, you know that. Jason Howell here, joined by Andy Anako in the center. Andy, how you doing today?
Moderately neato, thank you very much.
Okay, I was hoping that I'd hear you say the word neato. There's something really satisfying. I'm not sure what it is, but I've heard you say neato before, and I just really appreciate how you say neato.
I should take personal responsibility for bringing the word neato back. Also the word shifty.
Ooh. Yeah, shifty isn't a word that I use very often. You gotta really know the situation or the person that you're playing shifty to. Also joining us, Jeff Jarvis on the other side of the screen. How's it going, Jeff?
Groovy.
Groovy. Now, that's a word that I do actually use from time to time.
You do? I don't. I just thought I'd try to match Andy.
I mean, I don't use it all the time, but it finds its way into random conversations. Never in
with
a serious
irony,
sense.
Though. Yes, always with irony.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. From an ironic standpoint. Good to see you both on here. I'm going to jump right into some of the questions here. We put out some calls on Twitter, on Instagram, all over the place. We've been retweeting the last week or so to say you can send us your questions, AMA@twit.tv. And when you do that, we will put them into a handy Google Doc, and then we will read them, some of them anyways, and we'll ask whoever happens to be on each and every week to answer some of these questions. And I've got a whole list of them. So big thanks to Laura, who's the producer of this AMA, who helped to put all of this together and kind of sort things out and order them and all that kind of stuff. Being that it's the three of us on this show, I'm going to start with one of the questions from Sarah in here, who asked, let's start with Chris, actually. Chris asked, have Andy or Jeff ever been on a show together? Have the two of you ever done a show together other than this AMA?
Oof. I think I had the privilege of being on one Twit when I get to sit at the adults table with Andy. But I think it was it. Andy, were you ever on a Twig?
I have a vague feeling that we did something quick together, but nothing recent and nothing really, really big. It's like a TV show that I saw a while ago that I think Lyle Wagner was in it, but I don't remember what the plot was.
Exactly. I'm trying to use my Google Foo to like search and find a single episode. Let's see here.
You guys have the complete record of everything that's ever happened.
Yeah,
in the network.
but I'm still leaning on Google to do the hard work here. It appears that March 2nd, 2011, This Week in Google, episode 84.
It was Google. You were on. Okay.
Yep.
Yeah, Leo Laporte, Jeff Jarvis, and Andy Anako chimes in with breaking iPad 2 news.
That was it.
So there you go.
Those were the days. Memories.
Yes.
I don't have them anymore. I forget.
Also on that episode, apparently Gmail deleted some mail. Demand Media got into a fight with Google and more. Not some filled out show notes for this particular episode, but that's all we have to go off of. All right. I'm sure there have been more other times. I also saw in there when Steve Jobs had passed, we had some coverage that involved both of you, but I don't know if maybe you were on at different times and we just compiled it into a single list or what it was. But
yeah, I'd love to be on more podcasts with Jeff. He's quite awesome.
No, Andy's the real expert. That's why I like being on with Andy.
No, you are.
This has turned into Sammy Davis Jr. on any talk show. If I can just embarrass this man, nobody knows what this man does for charitable causes. Because he's got a small, big heart and a small ego.
Andy's a little old, but it's okay. You just smile when Andy starts talking about the past that way.
And just know you have access to Google and YouTube. So you can find some clips of this guy that Andy just mentioned that you've probably already forgotten his name. The next question is from Sarah, who said, Jason, Andy, and Jeff, if you hosted a show together, what would it be about and what would it be called?
Andy?
I would like it to be about some activity that we all enjoy that we would like to make tax deductible.
That's the right answer.
Like a podcast about really expensive Lego sets, diner breakfasts, things of that nature.
Going to Taco Bell regularly wouldn't count, I don't think.
I'm not sure I'd be on that podcast.
I'd be missing it so much right now. I'm missing Taco Bell.
I'd be the counterpoint on that episode. I'd be the counterpoint on that one. What about skydiving? You guys want to skydiving?
Because you have the great taco truck in Petaluma.
It's true. We've got a couple of really great taco trucks. Yeah, one in particular. What is it? Elroy's. Funny thing is, I've never actually been to Elroy's Taco Truck. I just know that it's really good because everybody else talks about it. But there's always a line, or at least there used to be. I don't know that they're doing a whole lot.
Yeah. But let's rewind this a second. Are you suggesting we do a podcast about skydiving, or that we do it like a tech podcast while skydiving?
Yes. What technology works especially well while falling out of an airplane is kind of.
You count me out.
But I'm telling you.
How do you feel about Apple trying to go to a virtual version of WDC? Andy, why don't you lead us off? Well, my feelings are. This was a mistake. Oh my God. So yes.
I'm telling you, if that we had the resources to do this podcast, guaranteed number one slot on iTunes. It would just happen or Apple Podcasts. Like, who wouldn't listen to that at least one time to see if people died at the end? It's kind of morbid. Anyways, let's see here. Okay. Home studio stuff, because we all have home studios. I believe both of your home studios is a lot more permanent than mine is. Mine is literally the corner of my master bedroom. But we have a question from TJ Mullen, who asked, given the amount that you record in your home studios, that's lighting, sound, camera, et cetera, are there things that you would set up differently with your podcast setup? What's your favorite part of your setup?
Andy, how many podcasts are you on? You're on a hit parade of like 20 a week.
Like three or four plus, I guess now that I'm doing like my weekly Boston NPR tech thing from my home studio, now that feels like a podcast because I'm no longer getting dressed and going on commuter rail and going to a studio. So it's like
podcast without pants. Yeah, we know.
That's how you're be able to notice on the television now that there are people like on CNN and whatever who are doing their reports from home. That's how you tell the pros from the non-pros, because the first thing a non-pro wants to do is like, hey, well, this used to be a joke, but hey, yeah, I guess I only have to put on like the suit and the suit top and the shirt and the tie, and I can just wear like surf jams. But then like they cut back to you and like you have like your knee up on the desk and they can see like this bare knee and this bare foot. Because you missed your cue. Now, if the pros know that, like, there will be a time during any stream in which, damn it, there's going to be a question coming up about that about a book, and I meant to like get that out of the other room, and then you have to stand up, and now people will see like the really horrible like lycra bike shorts that you hang out in the house with all day when it's like really really hot, and you're like maybe I'll pick something else to demonstrate rather than show people what I look like in lycra bike shorts.
We bloggers were accused of only wearing our pajamas back in the day, which was always a lie.
Was it true?
It was a libel, but no, it was not true.
Okay. Sure some bloggers do that. I do some of my prep work in my pajamas, but when I'm doing a show,
I don't want to know. When we saw your pillow today.
Yes, everybody was in bed with me this morning. It's true.
You must really like that pillow because you haven't cut it up to make face masks out of. That's not the metric yet that we're going by, that people are choosing what is the least liked pillowcase in their entire house and cutting it up. But to answer the question, there's very little that I'd love to change about it right now. However, if I were starting out, the first lesson that I would try to teach myself is that controlling the lighting is pretty much all there is to know about getting good video. And it starts because the first time I started doing streaming, I set up my temporary, whatever the quote permanent studio was going to be, in like this sunroom, like this glass enclosed back porch that at some point got upgraded in this house from like just a hangout screen porch to like an actual like sunroom. So look, all this wonderful natural light. But the problem is like you can't control this 80 kajillion kajigawatt watt light bulb in the sky. You can't control where it moves from time to time. And so you wind up this really, really harsh stuff. So ironically, like what I wind up doing is like just getting these like blackout curtains to all throughout this sunroom. I'm not in there right now, but even in this beautiful sunroom, the first thing I did was like buy blackout curtains so I could control the lighting completely. So the idea of having being able to shut off all the art, all the light you can't control and introduce like LED light panels that you can control is it makes you happy because you don't look you try to look like you put in some effort. The content is the most important thing, never forget, but when you'll keep chasing like just that, oh, maybe I shouldn't be using like a webcam, maybe it's time for me to buy just like a Panasonic like HDMI camera with like a Micro Four Thirds lens so I can get like depth of field like in Marcus Brownlee's or Renee Ritchie's videos. I would control the lighting. The only other thing that I might consider doing, I've been in this house for like 3 years now, and the only other thing that I would consider doing is putting up a couple of walls, because right now this is like a far corner of my office, and I do find that as technical as the technical needs of the video and the audio are, it's just as important to have a desk that is always clean, has no distractions on it. When you sit down to it, you've got a computer that has not been messed with for the past week. Everything is as you left it the time when you stop your last podcast. And also it helps the mental game, because when I sit, this partition behind me just helps you not to see the mess that is my actual work desk. Cause I'm in front of like a dedicated desk that is a little bit too close by. But once you sit down in front of the one place where you always do your podcast, you are not tempted to check out Twitter. You're not tempted to check out Instagram. But anything that keeps you focused on the content is going to pay off.
Oh, sorry. I was checking Twitter. I would change much. Andy's absolutely right about the light. Well, the first problem is I am horrendously, chronically pink, and it drives me nutty. And so I am sitting in front of a gigantic window. And it's probably two.
Now, are you pink in real life, or are you just pink because cameras?
No, I'm extremely white, but I'm in front of this huge window with nice little outdoors, you know, and it's all out there.
Look at that.
Right. So, nice. Sorry, I gave you motion sickness, everybody. And that's so. Problem one is that. So I need to get window treatments. I don't like them. I'm going to get them. That's point one. Point two is these cameras just don't do white balance, and they white balance against my head and my beard. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's part of the problem. Mm-hmm. So when Leo showed the other day having a camera with HDMI out, real camera with HDMI out, that's tempting me to try to switch to that. And then otherwise, we all have the wonderful Heil microphone, which Trevor B sent me, which I love, and a Mac Mini, because otherwise I'm a Chromebook guy. This is the one reason I used to use the Mac. However, thank you, Twit. Having this Mac has been, and this setup has been really helpful teaching from home and making videos from home and everything else I've had to do during this crisis. So that's been a blessing. And also an M-Audio box for the mic, and that's the setup.
Nice. Now, one thing that strikes me about your setup, Jeff, I'm assuming you have other like room lights on right now, correct? Like you've got just
normal
lights.
Yeah, but it's so bright here, it doesn't much matter.
Right. But when I look at your video, what I realize is everything in the background is like the warm room light color balance. And then all the light coming in onto your face is the outdoor kind of cool light. And so that ends up being a challenge for any camera, being able to balance between the two. I've got two Hue lights on either side of me at this very makeshift setup. I literally grab one of the bulbs from the other side of the bed and screw it in over here before I start the show. And when I turn them on initially, like in fact, if I turn this off and back on, you'll see that the color that it is right now is a warm color because this is kind of like the default for the room, right? It's kind of like a yellowish color, but I've got sunlight coming in through this window and I've got cool light coming in over here. So when I found, you know, they're Hue lights. So I saved myself a little widget here. And I don't know, hopefully it made the change. It's subtle, but what it ends up doing is kind of like balancing everything to the same color temperature, which makes it look a little better. So a little lighting tip for anyone out there who's struggling to bring a little bit of extra light, because it is important if you're doing video, punching yourself with a ton of light, I promise it doesn't hurt, is really important for a good quality video. So,
yep.
Yeah. Let's see here. Richard Pilgrim asked on Twitter, if you could go back and tell your 18-year-old self one thing, what would it be? It was a long time ago.
Yeah.
I had a lot of lessons to learn when I was 18 years old.
There are lots of joke answers, but the serious answer will be to I would tell them two things. Number one, any problem that you're confronting, empathy is usually going to be a big part of the answer. When you're mostly when you're dealing with other people, just like this, let go of your ego and just invest in empathy. The other thing, when I think about all the things that were tripping me up and all the things that frustrated me and made me scared or limited my thinking, a lot of it was just remember that your life is so much more than this day right now. The world is so much bigger than the place you are in right now. And I think that's a really powerful thing to give a young person, because it's hard to be, for instance, in a high school and not think that high school is reality. It isn't. Triply so because it's high school. But even if you decided to, even if you grew up in a certain town, you never left that town, all of the problems that are inside that town, all the frustrations, there is a bigger world outside of that. And you shouldn't let your worldview, your personality, your hopes, your aspirations be shaped by where you are. And as bad as a certain moment in your life could be, realize that it was very, very hard for me until I got to be maybe 30 to appreciate exactly how much time I have left on the clock and how big, hopefully, as long as you keep checking, crossing at crosswalks and only crossing at the light, how long your life can be. That as miserable as you might be at age 24, 25, as bad as a situation might be, realize there's going to be a time in which this is not where you're not going to be locked in this day forever. That even if this turned into like a bad movie and I were wrongfully convicted of a crime and sentenced to 7 years and I lost all my appeals, that would be horrible. But the thing that would probably keep me going is knowing that, okay, I'm 24, I'm 25. When I get out at age 34, 35, I will still have 30 good years left plus 20 or 30 years after that. So try not to think as though this is all there is ever going to be.
Yeah. Yeah. As you were talking, a quote that I saw on the gym, on the wall at the gym, kind of came to mind. And I guess it's a Mickey Mantle quote. If I knew I was going to live this long, I'd have taken better care of myself.
Yeah.
Which is totally appropriate. Jeff, what about you?
Probably would have read and studied more and pushed myself to do that. I was so eager to get out and have a career. I got out of high school a year early. I got out of college a year early. I rushed in and I only got a bachelor's degree. I've started 3 master's degrees at our school, but I wanted to work so badly. And if I'd taken a little time to maybe, you know, take that luxurious year in Europe that kids do when we're kids, and if I'd studied more and studied more classics and more books, I wouldn't have so many gaps I'd have to fill in now and without the time to do it.
Yeah. No kidding. Indeed. I think for me, I think I would tell myself that it's better to just kind of let go than it is to feel like I need to control every aspect of my life, that I need to have like supreme control over this or that, or even that I have the power to control anything in my life. And I think it's super appropriate for what we're going through right now. When I can find in myself the ability to just kind of let go and follow the stream instead of being the stick that gets stuck in the stream, trying to fight myself through it, things just get a lot easier. And even in the weakest of times, things improve.
Sorry.
No, it's okay.
You are one of the mellowest people I know. And I don't know, it's just California geography, but it's you. You just seem easy and calm. But it was striking some weeks ago when our co-host on This Week in Google, Stacey Hickenbotham, talked about anxiety. You came back with really good advice for her that she said she's used since. That's been really helpful.
Oh, good.
And so it makes one recognize that everybody feels this, even if you don't seem to, even if you don't appear to. And especially in these things we're going through right now, it's really important. And your generous help was very impressive.
That's awesome. I'm so happy to hear that's helpful to her. I mean, that's pursuing kind of like not more knowledge for myself around anxiety has been a very recent thing. It's probably been the last year of my life where I'm like, oh, wait a minute. That's what that is. That's anxiety. I just thought that was just something that everybody had. And we all had these like weird little conversations in our head telling us, you know, do that, don't do that. This is going to go bad or whatever the case may be. That's been really a large lesson that I've learned in the past year has just been kind of like, you know what? Anxiety comes out of this need to like feel like you got to control everything. Like we even have the ability to. And most everything is kind of out of our control. And so, you know, instead of telling ourselves that we have this strong ability to control the world or to ensure that our lives definitely do this and not that or whatever, it's just it's a fool's errand at the end of the day. And I don't know, things get better when I let go. And so that's kind of my eternal mission right now for myself, especially right now. So I'm happy to hear that helped.
That's a good fundamental mission for all of us, that ego is such a source of problems. And we know, and we don't, we grow up thinking, oh, ego is, oh, I think I'm a great person. I think that I'm a wonderful, the best person in the room. That's one way of using the word ego. It's actually, though, thinking of yourself as not that you bully yourself into a room and want to take it over, but you think of things in terms of you being the person who's operating this remote operated vehicle. You see things through those eyes when you start to realize that I'm not frustrated. The reason why I'm frustrated that I'm working with this other person isn't that I think this person will do a bad job, but because of my thing, where I know that if I do it myself, I will see how every step of the process works. I don't have to trust another human being. And then once you realize that, okay, this person is very well capable of doing this job. They might not do this thing the way that I would do it or in the order of steps that I would do it. But the best thing that I can do is let this person do their job. Otherwise, this is my ego getting in the way. This is not me saying, oh, I thank goodness I was here to step up. And like you said, you can't control the weather. Once you start thinking that, oh, well, there's going to be a hurricane, there's going to be an earthquake, and I can definitely do things to make sure that I will definitely survive this. Part of it is, yes, I'm going to prepare. Yes, I'm going to take steps. But it's also mentally necessary for you to say, I am not in control of this. I have to be ready to – I will be in a better frame of mind to deal with whatever happens after this if I accept that I'm simply going to have to deal with whatever happens after this.
Sure. Yeah. And I think what you're talking about as far as like this recognition of what ego is, like I've lived my life kind of having a vague understanding of ego, but I've definitely, you know, created more of an awareness around recognizing when ego is at play in something. And of course, awareness is the first step, right? Like once you're aware of something, then you can make some sort of a change in your behavior around that. And I don't know, it's a pretty powerful thing. We've lived all of our lives, you know, kind of attached to this sense of ego, and detaching from it is very, can be kind of nebulous and scary and uncertain and vulnerable, but it's pretty great when you do it and you trust in doing it and you realize at the, you know, on the other side of it that, oh, wait a minute, things aren't so bad right now. So yeah, I completely agree. Wow. Stuff getting deep on this show.
It's just like us making Google, man. We get into it. Yeah.
I love it. I need more of this. Let's see here. Where's the first place that you're going to go after all this this shelter in place is done for fun? What is the first thing that you want to do, or what are you looking forward to doing for fun when all this is over?
I revealed mine already. Taco Bell.
Oh.
Two bean burritos, no onions, extra cheese, small soda, senior discount. Can't wait.
Okay, so wait a minute. Let's back up here for a second. How often do you eat Taco Bell?
Well, so the thing is, so let me be clear here. My wife is a spectacular cook. She's been taking wonderful care of us. She's been trying to get me to eat one healthier. But what it was when I'm working out here in the burbs and I need a break, the break was I'll go get some quick lunch and, you know, it beats the heck out of White Castle or McDonald's. And so I go to Taco Bell and I have a bean burrito. It's nice and simple and it's wonderful. It's kind of my staple food. And then something magical happened. Some miracle occurred. And right across the street from my school opened up a Taco Bell cantina. Every day I can have Taco Bell. Now, I don't do that, but not that far off.
So is there a difference between a Taco Bell and a Taco Bell cantina? Like, is this like a mini Taco Bell?
The cantina has liquor.
Oh,
though, okay. Though getting schnockered in a Taco Bell strikes me as the saddest thing I can imagine.
That is interesting. I've never heard. This is a new thing to me. A Taco Bell with liquor. I've never heard of this.
Yeah. Let's go to Taco Bell and have a good time. I just don't see that. No.
I mean, I'm not saying that I haven't had liquor while eating Taco Bell. I've just never gone to a place that served both. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Take a bean burrito and a margarita. Like, that's just never happened at a Taco Bell for me. Are the drinks any good?
I wouldn't know. I haven't had it. I haven't had it.
They make a mean margarita right. at the Taco Bell cantina.
The website says it features urban restaurant design, open kitchen, custom menu with shareable appetizers and alcoholic beverages.
Oh. So this is like upscale Taco Bell. This is not your ordinary everyday Taco Bell.
Yeah. Okay. Now the other thing I should reward right now, it's not a restaurant or a place to go, but if you haven't caught it, Steak'em's Twitter account is phenomenal in the crisis. It is an intellectual, responsible wonder. It is really amazing. So I probably will also go out and get some Steak'em's and have a celebratory cheesesteak.
That is Steak'em with two M's.
Steak'em's is definitely my favorite slurry-based meat product. So that's not a bad pick. I'm sure that most people's real answer is just like the basic simple things, like being able to just go to the coffee shop whenever I want, and just being able to like, you know, hug somebody. But in terms of specific things, it would either be live theater in general, or it would be one of my favorite things to do in the entire world, which is to just go to the Public Garden in Boston with my camera and a couple of lenses, and just sit in a bench or sit in a grass next to a tree. And just for 2 or 3 hours, sitting, walking, and taking pictures, and just—it's a beautiful, beautiful place. The Public Garden is right next to Boston Common. The difference between the two is that Boston Common is the place where throw your frisbee around, that's fine. Play music, that's fine. If you're a busker, use an amp, just fine. In the Public Garden, though, this is like a botanical garden, well tended with sculptures and just beauty everywhere. You're not allowed to skateboard. You're not allowed to ride your bike. This is for people who want to, we're going to agree that we're not going to be jerks inside the Public Garden. We can be all the self-absorbed jerks we want to be elsewhere. So as a result, the most fun thing, a part of that is, as I'm taking my walk from Copley Square, usually the Boston Public Library, to the Public Garden, is I kind of like make a bet in my mind, like how many couples am I going to see getting their engagement photos taken there, and bonus, how many people are going to be there getting married without the appropriate permit from the Parks Department, because that is just as much fun as anything, because you're supposed to the permit costs next to nothing. They will absolutely allow it. All they do is they just try to space things out to make sure that that you can actually get from point A to point B, that the squirrels can still do their daily nut hunting and business without having to interrupt weddings in order to get through it. But you can always tell there are people who don't know that, and by the time they know that, they have to fill in a form and give them like the $18 whatever, it's too late. So you can see them just sort of like running this sort of like, you know, this heist where you see like first like some people in nice suits on a hot day will kind of just be there, and they've got like big shopping bags, and they're trying not to clump together or attract attention. And then some couple of nicer people will show up and start to sort of stake out a nice place. And then like the wedding party comes in, because they know that the shot clock, as soon as the bride appears, there's a shot clock involved, that they got to get in, get this marriage done, get a couple of photos, and get out before Johnny Law steps in. And to be fair, I've never seen the Rangers in the park break up a wedding. I actually talked to one of them once about it, and he says that everyone, we have a list of everybody who has a permit for a wedding that day. If you try to get married without, if you try to do a wedding in the park without a permit, I will know that you're not, you don't have a permit. But I feel, but I've decided, we decided long ago that it is not my, not our job to break up a wedding. So I'm going to pretend I didn't see it. I'm going to go for one lap around the public garden, around the lagoon. And if you, if they are wrapping things up or they've done by the time I get back, we don't have a problem. But it's, but it's fun to see them like do it's a, it's a happiest day of people's lives, and you, you get to be there without having to talk to anybody, without having to eat like a really bad chicken dinner, and you get to, it's just a great place. This is why I always recommend people who are saying I'm going to be in Boston for a couple of days, what should I do? And there are a couple, there are always good recommendations, but one of them is always, oh, just hang out in the public garden, just watch the squirrels are friendly, they're almost like house cats in that they don't like, they don't rush up to you for hugs and pets, but they don't really, they aren't bothered by your appearance, and if you seem to have a bag of something, they will look at you very attentively and see if you're going to give them food. It's just a great place, and that's the thing I miss most of all, being like stuck at home, that I have no real reason to be in Boston, so I guess I shouldn't be going to the public garden.
Well, I imagine it's closed at this point, right?
No, it's open park, so it's there, but yeah.
Okay. All right. Because I know a lot of parks, at least here in the Bay Area, a lot of parks are like literally closed. You're not allowed to go in there. So every place is a little different. Yeah. So I had one answer which seemed kind of lame, but I mean it's my immediate answer, which is one of the first things that I would do after all this is I would actually go to the gym that I work out at, only because it is a group exercise facility only. And I see the same kind of like 20, 30, 40 people there any given day that I go, depending on when I go, different people, whatever. It's just a really great community space on top of getting some nice exercise in and being challenged from a physical sense. And I really miss that right now. Like I'm doing what I can to stay active and everything, but I miss that kind of like that communal approach of like 20 people I know, all of us, you know, kind of working hard and slapping high fives and having a bunch of fun while we're staying healthy and everything. So I miss that. Don't know when that's going to return, but I look forward to that. But listening to your answer, Andy, reminded me of maybe not the first thing that I would do, but something I'm really looking forward to, like I have a yearning for right now, is someplace similar to, I mean, in some ways to what you were explaining. In Sonoma, in the town of Sonoma, they have a square, Sonoma Square there. And it's just this large kind of park field, park area with a beautiful fountain in the center of it that, you know, kids can like splash around in, and lining the entire park is just wine tasting rooms and, you know, awesome cafes and stuff. And it's just a great place to go on like a nice sunny summer day and set up a picnic, go to one of the wine tasting rooms, grab a bottle of wine, bring a picnic and hang out with the kids and just have some fun in the warm weather. And I don't know, listening to what you were saying was just reminding me of some really great times there that I am definitely looking forward to getting back to that. That seems like a luxury right now to be able to do that. So
yeah,
someday it'll happen. It's in our future at some point. Let's see here. If you could be anything in this world career-wise, what would you want to do and why? Or maybe you're doing it right, you know, maybe you're already doing it, but maybe the better question would be, if you weren't doing what you were doing right now, what would you be doing?
Andy?
See, I saw this on the list and I really couldn't come up with, I feel as though I'm lucky. I'm doing what I want, what I most want to do in life. I don't, my older siblings are trying to figure out a target date for retirement. And I personally don't get that because I hope to be doing what I'm doing until the day I drop. I felt as though I reached an inflection point in my career, and this we're talking about years ago, when it turns out that you're not just doing this writing and reporting thing as a freelancer just and you know because it's a cool gig you fell into for a few years. It's like, do you want to commit to this or not? I kind of redefined in my own head what I do. That it's not, oh, you're not a tech journalist, so it's not, I don't need to be writing for a newspaper, I don't need to be on the radio, I don't need to be doing podcasts. My job is go out, follow my interests, learn stuff, investigate stuff, and then share what I've learned through my point of view. And if I could, if the mayor of technology cast me out and made sure I couldn't ever write about or talk about technology again, I would be writing and talking about stuff, the other stuff that interests me. So yeah, I'm doing exactly the thing I want to do.
Nice. That's a great place to be.
Yeah, I don't know. I already got a second career, right? I was a reporter and writer and editor and all that for a lot of years. I got the things I wanted to do. And then I just decided one day that I was going to teach. And luckily I could. I thought, oh, they'll grab me up. I've had all this experience. Yeah. And then I talked to a friend of mine, Jay Rosen, at New York University. He said, oh, you're a dime a dozen. There's tons of you. But luckily the new, what is now the Craig Newmark Graduate School of Journalism started up. And I was introduced to the dean, and the dean hired me, and I had a new career. So I figure I already got that shot.
Yeah, good answer. So you've already been there, and you made the right choice. Here you are doing what you love. It's hard because, you know, kind of like what you were both saying, but Andy, you know, I heard you say it specifically, like, I'm doing something that I actually really enjoy. Like, I really love podcasting right mm-hmm. now. And in a strange way, it's never what I envisioned that I'd be doing. You know, I got my degree in audio production, and I think I expected that I would end up in a recording studio somewhere. That was certainly why I went into audio production as my focus. I'm not sure that I ever envisioned like journalism in any way or podcasting in any way being a part of it. But I've certainly grown into the role, I'd say, over the years, kind of. And I think some of that comes from confidence, right? Like feeling like, oh, wait a minute, maybe I actually do have something to say, or, you know, or know how to say it, which I definitely did not have that for many years. And I feel better in that role. And as I, you know, find myself in that role, everything becomes way more enjoyable as well. So I really enjoy what I'm doing right now. But I think the easy answer for me, if I wasn't doing what I'm doing right now, would be working with music production in some facet, and probably not in the, you know, self-production isolated form, because I do that. I create music on my own, and that's great, but it's also very isolating. It's also just kind of me sitting at a computer for literally days, weeks, months, sometimes into years, trying to create one thing. I would have loved to work in a recording studio where I had people, highly talented musicians coming through all the time, feeling like completely inspired by the talent walking through the door, feeling like I'm part of the creative process to help them realize their vision. And that just seems like that would be a dream for me. Like that. And I think that would still be a dream for me. It would be really hard for me to pass that up now.
Jason?
Go ahead.
And I would just add that, like, I'll amend my answer by saying I am doing exactly what I want to do. If we are talking about a fantasy world, like, I'd love to work in the story department at Pixar. That sounds like it would be fun.
That'd be fun. Yeah, no kidding.
No Jason, kidding. I just want you to. Can you write a new theme song for Twig, please?
What? You don't like your theme? You had a growing.
Oh, we all hate it. We've hated it for years. We have nothing.
I'll see what I can do.
All right.
The truth is, I'm not writing a whole lot of music right now. I'm actually kind of surprised that I'm not finding time for it, because we are doing what we're doing right now, this whole shelter in place. At the same time, in some ways, I feel busier than I have been in a very long time with just my work. Like doing the work for Twit, I don't know that I'm necessarily doing more, but it's just takes more time doing it from home. So I don't find myself with all of this extra time to do other things, including things I love, like making music. But
saving 3 hours a day commuting, and I thought, okay, I'll get the book written. No, totally.
Isn't that weird? That's weird. Like, why is that? We gotta find stuff for these things that we love, that we've been putting off. You know, because we've been telling ourselves for a very long time, man, if I only had the time. Once I get the time, I'll make it happen. Well, now we apparently should have the time anyways.
Well, that is something that should be pointed out to everybody who's listening, and also to ourselves, that the fact that we're unexpectedly at home for several weeks, if not a couple of 2 months, do not convince yourself you're a loser because you did not get the back bedroom repainted or you didn't write that novel.
Right.
There is nothing that you're supposed to be doing right now but taking care of yourself and others. And everything. And if you do exploration and get some stuff done that you always want to do, great. but don't really. You've got enough on your mind just keeping your hands clean to put extra bricks in your backpack like that.
Oh my goodness, so true. Such a good reminder, right? Because it's easy to kind of fall into that kind of shameful, like, oh man, I should have. What did I do? I wasted all my time. And it's not the point, you know. Everybody's doing it just the best that they can do. I run into that with, you know, and my wife does as well with our kids. You know, we've got two young girls, and so they're doing a lot of at home learning. And we have those conversations where we're like, man, are we doing enough? Are they learning as much? And blah blah blah. And it's like, you know what? They're learning as much as they can, given that they're going through the same crazy stuff that we're going through. They're going to be okay, you know, and so, yeah, nothing to hold, you know, lower our heads over. There's nothing to be shameful about that. We're all doing the best we can. I thought I'd pull out a question that's directed at each one of us. So I'm going to start with you, Andy. D. Sampley asks, I would like to ask Andy Anatko how he got interested in opera and what recommendations he has for a newbie.
Funny you should ask. Because you can read, next week you can go to the official webpage of the Met Opera Chorus, where I contributed an essay on this exact subject. I have internet friends at the Met now, and they're now that the season has been ended prematurely, they're like doing other stuff for social media, and so they reached out to me and saying, hey, we want to encourage like fans to write in and tell us their stories, and someone has to kick it off to let people know what this is. So I think if you look for the hashtag MetFanFridays, you'll see that. But I'll give you the audiobook version of it. It's what got me into opera was actually YouTube. The early days of YouTube, one of the first batch of viral videos was a soprano by the name of Diana Domrau singing an aria from Mozart's The Magic Flute. And I had never known that opera was like this. She was terrifying and dramatic, and the singing was athletic and powerful, and the staging and the costumes were epic, as good as in terms of setting you back on your heels, like any good special effects sequence in any blockbuster movie does. You grow up and you're thinking, you think of this opera is windbags in 100-year-old costumes doing 200-year-old music that has absolutely no relevance and to modern audiences and is completely indecipherable by modern audiences. And this got me thinking. My reaction was, all right, Ms. Domrau, all right, opera, you now have my complete and undivided attention. Please do go on. And it's really, it was fed a lot by the modern internet. That the other problem of getting into opera in previous generations would have been, well, great, here are operas that cost like $20 or $30 per set to listen to. There's no really easy access point. You can't just go into, if only there was some sort of worldwide network of essays and communications to explore. Instead, you'd be stuck with, here is, again, some 70-year-old windbag writing about what is proper opera and what is not. Oh, they did Romeo and Juliet, only they've set it in Milan instead of Verona. Why must they tamper with it? Okay, for God's sake. And instead, you get to, through YouTube, through your music subscriptions, and through what people are writing, you get to really explore and investigate. I started off as a fan. Okay, what else has Diana Domrau done? And that led me to an opera like Lucia de Lammermoor. And that now I really like that opera. And so, well, who else has performed Lucia de Lammermoor? And now that, well, Natalie Dessay is awesome. And you keep following these hyperlinks that lead you into all these wonderful little directions. And it comes down to, it is gorgeous, gorgeous music. And and part of what makes it so wonderful is that we kind of roll our eyes whenever they're remaking or they're rebooting Ghostbusters, or they're doing a new version of they're doing a new version of Weekend at Bernie's or whatever. And it's just a cash grab. Whereas with all these operas, you've seen them 100 times probably, like online or whatever. But every single company that does a new production wants to bring something new to it. So you know what the music is going to be, you know what the story is, you know what the characters are, but you have no idea how they're going to express it. So I hope I conveyed some of the excitement and what got
me
into it.
That's lovely. That was really good.
Mm-hmm. I did actually give, again, thanks goodness we had these questions earlier. I actually gave this some thought. So I would say that if you're interested in sampling opera, great opportunity next week. The Metropolitan Opera is streaming a lot of their really great past performances 5 nights a week. Next Thursday, they're doing a performance of Le Comte d'Ori, which is a comedy with two of my favorite performers, Diana Damrau and Joyce DiDonato. And again, it's not a da-da-da-da, I'm going to die, our love is doomed. No, it really is like a sitcom-y comedy, and it's hysterically funny. If you miss out on that, that's going to be that's going to be on the Met Opera site Thursday night through early Friday evening available. Mozart's Marriage of Figaro, also a comedy. It is super funny, and I really recommend checking out a performance of that. For intermediates, Lucia di Lammermoor, which is a truly gothic horror story in the form of an opera. It's famous for the mad scene where the lead character, Lucia, goes mad, and on her wedding night she stabs her brand new husband to death in their wedding on the wedding bed, and reappears during the ongoing wedding reception, her wedding gown streaked with blood and gore, holding a bloody knife, and she has totally lost contact with reality. And it is also this is another peek into what makes opera so cool. The composers know that if you are an opera singer, if you've been hired to sing opera, you've completed at least 10 years of really technical training, and you've probably been singing for 10 years beyond that. They can handle anything that you as a composer want to throw at them. Not only that, but the divas of the time are like, oh, for God's sakes, anybody could sing this aria. It's just so basic. The people who come to see me are hoping to see something they've never seen before. Give me a damn challenge. And then you get something like, okay, Miss Thing, I'll give you, I'm calling it the mad scene from Lucia di Lammermoor. It's going to be one of the most impossible to sing arias, pieces of music that's ever been written. And you're going to have to do it 8 times in 2 weeks in front of a live audience. How about that? Good. Make it even harder. Again, that's what I like about it. In terms of intermediate, I'm just getting started. I've only been watching live. I've been into opera for about 10 or 15 years. I've only been seeing live opera for about 5. And I'm just at that point where I'm willing to spend $150 on something that might really super confuse me, assuming that I'm seeing it live versus seeing it on recorded. Philip Glass did an opera called Akhenaten about the Egyptian ruler. Really, really beautiful production at the Met last season. I think it just aired on PBS, so there's a recording you can watch of it. But it's Philip Glass. So he is mm-hmm. famous for, like, I want you to listen to this. Now that repeats for 4 hours. That's Philip Glass. Now that guy has written an opera. That's a challenge. But my personal goal for live performances, I'm going to see my first live Wagner. Like, this is the Spear and Magic Helmet sort of Ride of the Valkyries sort of stuff. And that is super intense. It's dramatic. I've been blabbering on, so I'll wind it down. But I will say that I encourage you to watch a comedy, watch a bel canto or beautiful singing opera. Accessible, they're wonderful. And the piece of advice that I wish I could give myself at the very beginning that I'm giving to everybody else, it is not considered cheating to read the story before you watch it, whether it's on DVD and you're watching with subtitles, or you're seeing it live with subtitles on this on the stage. It's much better if you actually read the story of Le Comte d'Ori or The Marriage of Figaro or Lucia di Lammermoor, so you know what basically is going on, and so you don't have to always be going like this, keeping up the subtitles to find out what's going.
It's okay to spoil the ending, in other words.
again, it's a lot. See, a lot of that, that's the other fun thing. A lot of this is, if it were a telenovela, it would be so melodramatic, because one of the most famous, La Traviata is one of the most famous and well-performed operas in history. And it is, if you do it like cheap melodrama, it will play as cheap melodrama. It is literally a prostitute dying of consumption, alone and abandoned. It's like, oh God. But then you do it with this person's music and these levels of performance, and you're like, okay, it's fine. But she found her heart at the end. Violetta, you were too good for this world.
Awesome, man. That was some good.
That was an operatic performance in itself.
In and of itself, Dee Sampley, I hope you got what you were asking for. I think that you did. Jeff, the question I have pulled for you is, if you could only save one book from your library, which one would it be and why?
Well, right now I'm working on Gutenberg stuff. And that's a drinking game on Twig, if I say Gutenberg.
It is. I figured that would come up in this answer.
So I went to the bookshelf because, like Andy, we were warned. And I've got a whole raft of, you know, books about books here. So this one, put the camera back and stop causing motion sickness. I just pulled this out because this is... The Printing Press as an Agent of Change by Elizabeth Eisenstein. She really started the field of book history and book study. Oddly, you'd think it would have been around since books, but it wasn't. And she wrote saying that she was amazed at how little credit the book was given. Now, people since then give her a lot of crap because they say it's technological determinism and the book didn't change things really. It changed anyway, and fine. But she created an entire field of study. Sadly, I was so looking forward this summer. I was going to go to two conferences that came in great measure because of her work. One in St. Andrews, Scotland, and one in Amsterdam. And the Amsterdam conference was canceled last week. And I just moments ago saw a tweet saying that the St. Andrews one is canceled as well. No surprise. But it's pretty amazing, pretty phenomenal that someone can start a field of study and really changed the way that we think about this. So she started because she didn't like what Marshall McLuhan was saying. She wanted to rebut him, and she's to her surprise, didn't find a lot or any much of any material on book history. There was one famous book before her. And so she wrote this huge tome that I've read a couple times, but I would still study more.
That is a sizable book that you have there. I don't know that I've ever read anything that thick. And multiple times you've read this book?
More than once? Yeah, just underlining, you know, doing. You can't see them.
Yeah, no, I can see little pages hanging out.
Yeah, I mean, I underline like crazy in the book.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Right on. All right. I got a question from John Brammer on Twitter, who said, been listening over the years. I picked up that you enjoy camping. What's some of your most favorite or unique outdoor gear? What is one of the most memorable camping or hiking trips you've had? As far as gear, like I'm not like a gearhead as far as camping is concerned. We go camping and then we realize, oh, hey, we need to pick up one of those things. We saw someone at a different site using it. And so then we do and whatever. One thing that we added recently, I don't know if it's necessarily camping gear as much as it is just fun and you take it to the right campsite and you can have a blast with it. It's a slack line set. So a slack line set is basically a long kind of line, well, two different lines that you can attach around two very big, sturdy trees. You have to do it responsibly so that you don't hurt the trees. And then you tighten them, and it's essentially like a balance beam between these trees. And you've got one above you that you can use for kind of holding on to secure yourself, and then one below, and it, you know, kind of bounces a little bit. And that's just been a lot of fun to like create something fun and unique at the campsite. Again, certain campsites won't even allow for this, but certain ones don't care, and you do have to be respectful and responsible when you're using it. So that was a lot of fun. One of my most memorable locations or memorable trips actually just happened last year. I went on a hiking trip with a bunch of my friends, and we went to in the Tahoe area. There's this whole area called the Desolation Wilderness, And I mean, we hiked for, I think I was gone on that trip for probably 6 days, just hiking around. You know, at one point we went up, you know, we're scrambling on rocks to get to the highest point of these mountains. And, you know, you do that for a couple hours and then you finally get up there. And it's just such a huge accomplishment. There was one day where we found this waterfall that was just littered with rocks. And we basically scrambled up these rocks around the waterfall for like 3 solid hours. Like it just kept going up and up and up. And we just, and so you work yourself into a sweat because it's hot and everything. And then you find this like beautiful pool that this one particular part of the waterfall is dropping into, and just jump in and cool off and hang out for a bit and then keep on going. And oh man, that trip was just so beautiful. I have to go back. So that's Desolation Wilderness. We are fortunate in the Bay Area to have the Tahoe area as close as it is, because it's just filled with amazing places to check out. So that's me. I love camping. What can I say? It's good for my soul, and our family loves it. We go camping every summer, probably, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 times a summer. So we make it up, which was how I grew up.
I want a mini bar.
Well, you could bring a mini bar. Maybe it's not the same, but you could. So we're reaching the end. I do have a little bit of a surprise for the two of you. I've got a speed round that I prepared. And these are questions that you don't even need to like study for or know in advance. You could just answer these as they come to you. I think this will be pretty easy. Are you guys game?
Okay.
Yeah?
Bring it.
All right. Speed round. That doesn't necessarily mean you have to stumble over yourself to answer, but here we go. Just a few questions. Hot weather or cold weather? Andy?
Cold.
Jeff?
The man lives in New England. Cold.
Wow. Cold weather over hot weather. I'm totally hot weather. Sweet or savory food? Jeff?
Savory.
Savory. Andy?
Savory.
Yeah, I got to say savory too, although I do have a definite sweet tooth. Give me a tub of ice cream. I could destroy that thing.
Peanut butter or cookies.
Oh, okay.
Which is kind of savory and sweet, you know. So
totally. It's a little bit of a mixture there. Yeah. Movies that last an hour and a half or movies that last 2.5 hours? Andy.
No good movie is long enough. No bad movie is short enough, said the brilliant Roger Ebert. And that's going to be my answer.
All right. That's a good enough answer. I respect that. Jeff?
How long is the longest opera you've liked, Andy?
Ooh, 4 hours, I think.
Hey, see, you got tolerance. Hour and a half, me.
Hour and a half.
There is a half hour intermission. So,
okay. This is a hard one. Often with hour and a half movies, I'm feeling like I want more. So I would have to probably go 2.5 hours, as long as it's a good 2.5 hours. Reading a book or listening to a book, Jeff.
If I have to use it for writing, I read it so I can mark it all up. But otherwise, I've taken, thanks to Leo in great measure because of Audible having been a sponsor, listen to books. But because I'm not driving, I'm listening to fewer books and it's bugging me.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I experienced that as well. What about you, Andy?
Reading.
I love
both, but if it's A or B, it's going to be reading.
Yeah, I know. It's hard to pick a definitive. I definitely fall more in the camp of listening to a book than reading, although I'm kind of coming around more to sitting down. Like there's something very nice and zen-like of sitting down with a book and reading it as well. But I listen to way more books than I read. HTML or WYSIWYG? Andy.
I'm trying to find a context in which let's say that I am writing something. I would much rather write something in a WYSIWYG environment than in an HTML environment.
All right, that works. What about you, Jeff?
Yeah, I was gonna try to be macho and say HTML from back in my day. But yeah, like writing on Medium is a beautiful experience.
Yeah, I completely agree. WYSIWYG all the way. The stuff I tried to convince myself that I was good at by writing HTML.
By some lore, in some states, I was there. Now, there's various stories about this, but a guy named Jonathan Siebold at a Siebold publishing conference where there was the first effort to show what type was actually going to look like on a screen. And everybody kept on saying, what you see is what you get, what you see is what you get. And then he came up with a whiteboard and he wrote WS, da 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 da. And he said, I'm going to say that, pronounce that WYSIWYG. And I think I was there then. Others might claim provenance, but I think I was there for WYSIWYG.
That's a monumental
day. That old.
Everyone knows what WYSIWYG is. At least most of us do, anyways. Clamshell laptop or 2-in-1? Andy.
2-in-1. When I got my first laptop that has like a 360 degree screen, the ability to just set it up like a tent when you just want to watch video and get it out of the way or fold it all the way. Yeah, absolutely. I don't see an advantage to something that doesn't fold that way.
Yeah.
My beloved Chromebook Pixelbook, 2-in-1.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess I would have to say that too, because I love the Pixelbook and the ability to do that. I don't know that I use the tent pole that often, but it's nice to have it. Sometimes folding it down into like the tablet mode comes in handy.
When I was on airplanes, I'd watch movies on it. I'd say, no, I don't have to put this away because it's a tablet when we take off.
Yeah, exactly.
And I was looking forward to maybe spending some money, bad time to do so, on the new Galaxy Chromebook from Samsung, but the reviews were not good.
Yeah, so, it does look really nice, though. But yeah, some of the reviews not as
battery
good.
Problems.
It's, yeah. Morning walk or evening walk? Jeff.
Until my knees went with old age and my feet and everything else, morning air quotes run was what I used to love to do, but no more.
Yeah, that works as well. What about you, Andy?
Evening walk, because a morning walk is not going to happen. I need to have higher level software online inside my brain before I can think that I joy walks. This community is lovely for walking, but afternoon walks is less when like, wow, that'd be great. It'd be great to go out and like see me. I'll take my camera or I'll just go out and run this errands. My morning is like, or we could just stay and not complicate our lives in any way, shape, or form.
Look,
that's the software. That's the state of my software at 8:30 in the morning.
I'm comfortable right now. That's the answer. I would have to say evening walks as well. But I enjoy a good morning walk from time to time. Okay, three more. Dine in or take out? Andy.
Oh, dine in. If I'm spending money to have for a restaurant, I want to sit down. I want someone to be nice to me. I want to like have the food brought to me. I will tip them, all that sort of thing. But that's part of why I like eating out.
Love it. What about you, Jeff?
Cruel question. Dine in.
Dine in. Although I know your affinity for Taco Bell. So maybe take out, it depends on the scenario, but you can dine in there too. It's just not the same. Dine in for me as well, all the way. Okay. Two bonus questions. I don't know why I have them labeled as bonus, because they're basically all the same. You have to live your life with either hiccups or always feeling like you have to sneeze. Which one do you prefer? Jeff.
Sneeze.
Always feeling like you have to sneeze.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. Hiccups, the lack of control with hiccups is worrisome.
Yeah. Andy?
I have to say hiccups because that is a form of purgatory. When you feel like you have to sneeze, you can't mentally do anything else but work on the sneeze. Yeah. And I don't know. And in your hypothetical, you haven't said that at some point you learn to block it out or anything like that. But yeah.
No, I think, hypothetically speaking, this is just the way it is forever. And either way sounds completely awful. God, I don't even know. Maybe it's sneeze, because when you finally get that sneeze out, oh man, it feels so good when you finally get that big sneeze out.
No. At least you always have to. You always have to feel. You always feel like you're going to sneeze, but it never comes.
Oh, that's true. Feeling. Oh, yeah, you're right. So there's no payoff.
See,
All right.
I feel like it. Like I'm going to annoy the hell out of everybody's listening. I managed to go shave and a haircut.
in that case, well, no, I couldn't deal with hiccups.
We can't move forward until you go 2 bits. Say 2 bits. Yeah.
I know for a fact I couldn't deal with hiccups my entire life, so I'll have to go with feeling like I need to sneeze. Final question. Clowns, good or bad? Andy.
May I ask a question? Would Bill Irwin be considered a clown or a new a new vaudeville performer?
Google's Bill Irwin. Maybe I should know this.
If Bill Irwin is a clown, then yes, clowns. If Bill Irwin is not a clown, then I would say no clowns.
I think clowns are whatever you want to define them as. So I'd say, okay, it sounds like a positive and affirmative from you. What about you, Jeff?
Clowns evil.
Yeah. I think I'm right there with you. Clowns evil. Yeah. No, thank you. This was a lot of fun, you guys. These AMAs yes. are a blast, and great. Really appreciate the both of you taking time out of your busy at-home schedule to join us on Twit.tv.
I'm sorry, well, I can't do it. I'm traveling now.
I will say, people are really easy to reach right now when it's like, hey, yeah. you want to be on the show? Yeah, sure, why not?
you could probably get Tom Hanks.
A lot
of shows are now thinking, you know what, we might be able to get Tom Cruise. We just might.
Totally. You've got nothing to lose. They're just as bored as you are, but with more expensive toys. I guess we wrap this up. Jeff Jarvis, of course, This Week in Google, so many other things. And then Andy Anatko, MacBreak Weekly, and Material. What else do you guys want to plug if there's anything that you want to get out there?
I'm on most Fridays at WGBH, Boston's NPR station. If you can stream it, you can stream my tech stuff live, or just they usually have the past 6 weeks or so of stuff on there. You can see that at WGBHnews.org. And as usual, if you can spell my last name, you can access my Twitter and my Instagram, IHNATKO.
Right on. You got anything else, Jeff?
My Twitter COVID list, I recommend. I have 500 plus epidemiologists, virologists, infectious diseases doctors. Gives me hope to see science. If you go to bit.ly/COVID Twitter list, all lowercase, you too can follow the science that's happening to save us.
Right on. That's an important list. I will add that to my Twitter lists. I didn't realize you had that. So that's awesome. Thank you both. I'm Jason Howell. I just do shows here at Twit a lot in my bedroom, apparently, these days. Tech News Weekly, Hands on Android, All About Android, occasionally dropping in This Week in Google, and anywhere else that they'll have me, AMAs included. I believe that this is going to be posted on our YouTube channel as a Twit bit. So just search for at Twit on YouTube, and you should find the channel that you can subscribe to and watch this after the fact. But right now, we seem to be doing these AMAs every Friday. And I think that probably isn't going to change. But honestly, I haven't heard anything about next Friday. But keep your calendar open. Keep your Fridays open, because we'll certainly be doing something every Friday. Thanks, everybody, for watching. Thanks for sending in your questions to AMA@twit.tv. Continue doing that, and we'll have them for a future opportunity. Take care, everybody. Bye-bye.